Today we're beginning on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph with the second Mishnah on the third Perek. We're discussing the Mizbeach. Yesterday we discussed the structure of the Mizbeach, the shape of the Mizbeach, both in terms of its footprint as well as its height. 10 amot high, a footprint that starts at 32 by 32 amot, ends up with a marachat that is 24 by 24 amot. Again, that reconciles with the Pasuk in Yechezkel that says the Ariel is 12 amot in all directions, a reference to the Mizbeach having a maracha of 24 by 24 on the top. We noted also that the Mizbeach halfway up at the 5 amot point has a chuta sikra, that the 6 amot point has a sovev, which goes around the entirety of the Mizbeach, as opposed to the yisod, which does not go around the entirety of the Mizbeach. We saw the machlokot as to where it ends the yisod, how much is missing from the eastern side, as well as the southern side of the Mizbeach in terms of the Yisod. The Sovev, on the other hand, goes entirely around the Mizbeach at the 6 Amot level. And then we saw that on top of the Mizbeach, you have the Karnot in the four corners, and then inside of that you have the 1 Amah strip, of which the Hiluch Raglei HaKohanim, which is where the Kohanim were able to go around the Maracha. Now, the Mishnah tells us, Subikaren Marvit Romit, on the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach, Hayu Shnei Nikavim, there were two holes. This is down at the yisod of the Mizbeach. Min shnei chutmin dapim. They look like two nostrils, piping that went down. Shadanim nitanim ayisod maravi vasod romit. To which the shayre adam, the leftovers of dam for the korbanot, were placed on the southern side and the western side. We already discussed in Zvachim as to which dam goes to the west and which dam goes to the south. The basic principle is whatever you're closest to, after you process the dam, that's where the Sharia dam goes. So that means any dam that was brought into the Heichal, Chatot HaPnimiyot, when you exit from the Heichal, the first part of the Yisod that you're going to bump into is the western side of the Yisod. And therefore, all the Korbanot that are Chatot HaPnimiyot, that includes Parvaseir of Yom Kippurim, and the Chatot HaPnimiyot, which is Parvaseir HaNisrafim, the Parvam Dover Shel Tzibur, the Par Kohen Mashiach, the Seir Lavod Zarah, they all have Matnot Dam, or Hazot Dam, that are inside the Eichal, and therefore the Sharia Dam goes on the western side. The southern side, because the ramp of the Mizbeach is found on the southern side of the Mizbeach, when you descend from the Mizbeach, then you're always going to be found on the southern side. So for instance, if you do a Chatat on top of the Mizbeach, when you descend from the Mizbeach on the southern side, you're going to put the Dam on the southern corner, because that's the closest corner, as well as the fact when you do the Shtayim Shen Arba, then we have a correlation between the Ola and all the others that have Shtayim Shen Arba, where the second Matan Dam is done Marvit Dromit. So over there, again, you're going to be on the southern side, and you're going to place it into the southern Yisod. There, the blood, Yordim Behen, they descend in the piping, Umit Arvim Ba'ama, and then they mix together in an Ama, V'yotzim L'Nachal Kidron, and then they go out to Nachal Kidron. So mitarvim ba'ama can either mean that within an ama of their drop down, they already, the pipings are joined together, they're no longer separate pipings anymore. Or mitarvim ba'ama is a terminology for a water canal, which was the name of any aqueduct because the shaping was done an ama deep by an ama wide. And in the Migdash, there was the waters that were brought from Enetam into the Migdash, then exited the other side of the Migdash. On the southeastern corner, it exited out the water there and then drained into Nachal Kidron. That's what it says here, that mitarvim ba'ama v'yotzim l'Nachal Kidron. And then they exit out to Nachal Kidron. They have done in tests in the excavations that they did of the stairways on the southeastern corner, there was a channel that was found between the stairs. That channel they tested and they found biological material there that had cells that had the composition of blood. And that probably was the remnants of the blood that went out from the Migdash through the Ama out to Nachal Kidron. And we know from the Gemara in Me'ilah and other places that when it went out to Nachal Kidron, they used to sell it to their farmers to use as fertilizer. And even though Naseh Mitzvato, even though the mitzvah was complete and technically there's no Me'ilah, it wasn't considered appropriate to just have them take it without paying for it. And therefore the Migdash sold that water, that fertilized water, to the farmers to use for their fields. The Matabe Ritzpah, on the ground right adjacent to that southwestern corner where the piping is for the Shari Adam, Botoa Karen, that same corner, Makoma Yasham Amalama, there was a Ama Bayama place, the Tabla Shoshayish, that had a stone of marble that was placed there, the Tabat Aitak Vuaba, and had a ring in it. The ring was to lift up the stone, to pick it up, to open up that entranceway. Shibo Yordim the Shayit. From there, he used to go down to the Shayit, Umnakimoto, and the Kohanim would descend there, or the young Kohanim would descend there. It's a smaller space if it's an Amah by an Amah. To descend there, they would go down there in order to clean it out. What it sounds like over here is that the dam from the Yisod that was poured, the Shayit dam was poured from the Yisod that goes to the Amah, after a certain amount of time, the blood coagulated in that area, and it made it harder and harder for the blood to descend through the piping, and so they used to have to clear it out. They should go through this stone opening to get underneath to the area where there was a hollow space that would let the blood flow down towards the Ama, and they would clear it out to free up the flow of blood so that it would go towards the Ama freely. The Bartanura says that they went from there down to the Shittin, and that's where they had to clean it out like they did by the Nisachim. If you think the word Shayit over here refers to the Shittin, we also find a similar thing with regards to the libations that were put on the southwestern corner as well, that they also descend into the Shittin, cleared that out because, again, the wine from the Mizbeach would get dried out or coagulated there. It would cause it to stick to the walls, and they would have to clear it out every once in a while. The Tiferet Yisrael thinks that that's very difficult, because why is it called sheet instead of sheetin? And also the fact that the Gemara indicates in Sukkah that there was a different entrance way to clear out the area where the Nesachim dropped down into the sheetim, and therefore he thinks that they're totally separate areas, the sheetin and the sheet that's mentioned over here. And then on the southern side of the Mizbeach, there is a ramp that makes the Pnei HaMizbeach, the face of the Mizbeach, the southern side. So whenever you're talking about the front of the Mizbeach, the Pnei HaMizbeach, you're always referencing to the southern side because that's where the ramp to ascend the Mizbeach was. Lamed Bet, Arochav Tetzayin. It was on the hypotenuse, 32 amot, and it was 16 amot wide. They had a 16 amot wide ramp that ascended on the hypotenuse 32 amot. As to what exactly its footprint was on the ground is subject to machloket, both because how much of the ramp overlapped with that which was on the southern side of the Mizbeach, in that the ramp goes over the Sovev. It also goes over what would have been the Yisod, or whether there is a Yisod there. So it goes over those two amot. So that takes away two amot of the footprint of the ramp, as well as the fact that it's 32 amot of hypotenuse, which means that the flat part of the ramp has a smaller footprint than 32, aside from the fact that 2 amot of it are already swallowed up into the Mizbeach itself. The Gemara in Zvachim also notes that there were two smaller ramps that went off the larger ramp, one to go to the Yisod and one to go to the Sovev. There again, there are many different interpretations, illustrations of what exactly was meant by the fact that there were these two smaller ramps that went off to the Yisod and went off to the Sovev. There is a tiny space, the Gemara in Zvachim says, between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach itself. That was ordered to facilitate the need to be zorek the items onto the Maracha rather than to place them onto the Maracha. And so therefore there was a small gapping between the ramp itself, or the tail end of the ramp, and the Mizbeach. How big that gap was, we discussed again in the Gemara in Zvachim, because it's never given or never clear how wide the gap was between the ramp and the Mizbeach itself. The height of the ramp was 9 amot, because it reaches the platform of the Mizbeach. It doesn't go above the Karnot of Mizbeach, but it reaches to the 9 amot, to the Maracha level of the Mizbeach. It's 9 amot high, it's 32 amot on the hypotenuse, and then you can calculate through Pythagoras' theorem what the base level was that remained. We'll do that later on when we're discussing the dimensions of the Azara and what the footprint of the Mizbeach and the ramp were on the Azara. But you just have to note that two of the amot of the footprint of the ramp are subsumed in the Mizbeach, because it's going over what either is the Yisod or what would have been the Yisod of Mizbeach, which is one Amah. And it also goes across the Sovev, which also another Amah. Although those amot were both five Tfachim amot, but some of that is swallowed up. So there is overlap between the Kevesh and the Mizbeach because of that. Otherwise, if you think that the footprint of the Kevesh itself was 32 amot, and you have a 9 amot high, then the actual hypotenuse would be 33 plus amot. So depending where you think the 32 is referencing to, is the 32 referencing to the hypotenuse, or is the 32 referencing to the base of the Kevesh? So then, either the Kevesh is more than 32, it's 33 plus, or if the Kevesh itself, the hypotenuse is 32, then the base is somewhat smaller than 32 amot, and we'll get to that again when we are dealing with the footprint that it takes up in the Azara. Urvuva haitalo b'maravo, and there was this little window on the western side of the ramp, that's on the western wall of the ramp itself. Chatatov that was pasul, that had to wait for what's called ubar, tiubar tsuratan, until they lose their character. And that is because you have to make it into notar. Certain psulim are not strong enough inherently to make the item pasul that you would burn it. So you have to leave it until it's tiubar tsuratan, until it's notar. And you do that in that little window there. They used to put the chatatov to wait for it to reach that point. And then afterwards it'd be nisraf. So there was this small window to facilitate that for the chatat ha'ov. So then the Mishnah now deals with the problem of procuring stones for the mizbeach, and that's because we have psukim both in Sefer Shmot and Sefer Devarim that tell us that you're not allowed to put any metal to the stones of the mizbeach. Vanita sham mizbeach l'Hashem lokecha mizbeach avanim. Lotanif aleim barzel avanim shlemot tibned mizbach Hashem lokecha. That's found in Parshat Ki Tavoh, as well as in Parshat Yitro. It says, "V'mizbach avanim taseli lotibned hen gazit ki charbecha heinafta elah v'atachalaleha," which makes it a little hard to quarry the stones if you can't use metal to take out the stones. So echad avnei hakevesh v'echad avnei hamizbeach. No matter whether these were the stones of the ramp or the stones of the mizbeach. Mibikat Beit Karim, they came from this location, Bikat Beit Karim, which was nearby to Yerushalayim. Bechofrim lamata mibitula, they dug below the virgin soil. Mivin sham avanim shlemot, and they bring from there whole stones. Shalohu na falehem barzel, no metal has ever touched. Shabazel posel benigya, because barzel ruins the stones even with touching. Any metal that comes into contact with them is posel them. Upigima, either as the girso is the chol davar, or the alternate girso is upigima bichol davar, which means that any pigima, no matter what it was caused by, is problematic. So if the stone is missing any part of it that wasn't part of its natural shape, then that is posel the stone. If metal touches it, that's disqualifying even if there's no pigima in it. That would be the way to read the Mishnah. So then the problem that you have is, how do you get a square mizbeach or a ramp, a proper building, if you're taking these odd-shaped stones that are whole out of the ground and placing them down? You're not quarrying them. You're not shaping them. So how do you get a mizbeach that is shaped the way that you want it? So that, again, we learned in the Gemara that they created platforms to build the mizbeach, and the forms had the shape of the different levels of the mizbeach. The first form was 32 amot by 32 amot. And then they put filler wood in the areas where there was not supposed to be any yesod. They put the stones in there. After the stones were there, they filled the area with sid, plaster, and other binding materials, which the Gemara discusses what was in the concoction that went there. When they did that, it created a mold that was square. So the stones comprised the mold, but the mold was squared out by putting on the sid and plastering it to square it out. And so you had the first mold that was an amah high, and it had 32 by 32 minus the areas where there was no yisod. The next block that they had was shaped 30 by 30 and was 5 amot high. And again, they filled it with stones, and then they filled it with the liquid material that bound it and the plaster that made it into a square. And then they had another form that sat above that that was 28 by 28 and 3 amot high. And then they had the cubic amot forms to make the karnot. And that's how they structured or built the mizbeach. It was built in blocks that were the stones and the sid. That's how you got it squared out. Nifkaga achat mehem. If one of the stones is damaged, hipsula vikulan shirot, it is disqualified, and the remainder of the stones are fine. Umlabdenota pamayim bishana, they used to whiten it twice a year, echad bapesach vechad bachag, once prior to Pesach, once prior to Sukkot. Would make sense in anticipation of the regel, they wanted to get it ready. And whitening it was putting the seed back on, was putting the outer plaster back on to make sure that it was white and it was squared out properly. Vayichal pamachat b'pesach. And Eichal also, they would have to whiten or replaster it once a year, that they did before Pesach, after the winter months. They would do the Eichal as well. It had less utility, meaning in terms of people walking on it and being bumped into and touched. So therefore, it had less wear and tear. And therefore, only once a year did they redo the outer layer of seed, outer layer of whitening plaster that was on the Heichal. Rabbi Omer, kol Erev Shabbat, melabnin otan, b'mapa. Every week on Erev Shabbat, they used to whiten it by running a cloth over it, b'pnei adamim. Because of the blood that got on the Mizbeach from the Motan Adam, they used to wipe it off with a rag. Lo yisidin oto, b'kapis shel barzel. They could not put the plaster or the whitening agent on with a metal tool, which they use today when they are putting on plaster. They use the trowel that is used for applying the plaster. Obviously, you can't do that with a metallic instrument, shemayiga, because maybe it'll come into contact with the stones. I mean, that you do have a barrier between the instrument and the stones because it's the plaster. But there's a risk that the stones, which are uneven, that are just laid there, there's a possibility that you would hit a stone when you're plastering, b'psul, and then that will cause it to be pasul. The graw brings, if one of them was touched by metal, the entirety of them is psula. They are all psulim, it ruins the entirety of the mizbeach. It might relate to a difference in versions that's found in the Mechilta de Rabbi Shmuel versus the Mechilta de Rashbi of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. And then there you have different girsot as to whether the metal coming into contact with the stone as opposed to nifkema ruins just that stone or ruins all the other stones that are there along with it. Shabarzel nivra v'katzer yamav shel adam. Whose metal was made or it is forged into materials that shorten the life of individuals. Weapons of war, all of these things come from metal. And amizbeach nivra l'arich yamav shel adam. And then the Mizbeach is there to elongate, extend the life of man by getting them kapara from their chataim. And ubedin shenifa mikatzer lamarich. Therefore, it's inappropriate that the instrument of shortening life should ever be placed on the instrument of lengthening life. And so that's why metal is a disqualifier with regards to the Mizbeach. There is a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the requirement of lo tanifa lehem barzel only applies to the Mizbeach and the Kevesh, or whether it broadly applies to the Mikdash as a whole, and that you're not allowed to put any metal to any of the stones of the Mikdash. The Ravid and the Tiferet Yisrael believe that this had broader implications, that it wasn't just true of the Mizbeach and the Kevesh, but also the Echal and the Azeroth. And the Kevesh of Mishnah on the Rambam is Kolek on this and says it only has application by the Kevesh and the Mizbeach. If you believe you could put metal to the stones of the Mikdash, then the rest of the stones were quarried stones that were used in the building of the Mikdash and the floor of the Mikdash. The only requirement is that by the Shlomo HaMelech it said that they did not hear the instruments of cutting and working tools in the area of the Mikdash. They did it outside and then brought them in ready-made and placed them down and situated them. Whereas if you believe that you can't even put metal on the other areas of the Mikdash, then you would have to do something similar to what they did with the Mizbeach, which is you'd have to use filler plaster in order to fill it in. It seems less likely, especially given what we know and what we see from the remnants of the Herodian renovation of the Mikdash, that those are clearly quarried and carved stones. So it seems that there was metal that was touching those stones. V'tabot ayu l'tzvono shel Mizbeach. And then there were these rings on the northern side of the Mizbeach. This will become important when we go to the layout of the Azarah and the extent of the north-south, 135 amot. Here we have on the northern side of Mizbeach, either Vav Starim Shel Dalet Dalet, six groups of four, four, Ve'yesh Omrim Dalet, four Shel Vav Vav. of six apiece. Sheliem shochtim et hakodoshim. That's where they did the shkita hakodoshim, because that's on the northern side of the mizbeach, and there's a requirement for kodshei kodoshim al yerech hamizbeach tzafona on the northern side of the mizbeach. We did have a machloket in the Gemara in Zvachim as to what is considered to be north of the mizbeach. Is it only directly opposite the northern side of the mizbeach? Is it even including the area of Ben Ulam mizbeach? Or is it even including the area from the beginning of the Azara to the mizbeach? But these rings were situated directly north of the mizbeach in order to facilitate the ability to shech kodshei kodeshim there. There are 24 of them connected to 24 mishmarot. Each one of the mishmarot had their own ring that was used. What the ring did, according to the Rambam here in the Parish of Mishnayot, was it locked the animal's leg in place. They actually put it around or inserted the leg of the animal there. Therefore, the animal was now locked in place by its legs, made it easier to shech. The Rosh, on the other hand, says that it was used to put around the neck of the animal, to hold the neck of the animal in place. He also describes it as being pivoted or hinged on one side, by which you could either open it up or lift it out, put the animal in, and then reinsert it, so it locked the animal's neck in place for the shechita. Either way, it was put in there by Yochanan Kohen Gadol to help out the Kohanim with their process of shechita, whereby they wouldn't have to do all sorts of things to, quote-unquote, tame the animal, hold the animal in place, because they had practices that were problematic, including cutting the head of the animal to let blood drip into its eyes to confuse the animal, which were practices of Avodah Zarah, and other means by which they were trying to hold the animal in place. This made it much easier and made it that it was more efficient in terms of the shechita of the animal. Beit Amit Bachai Mayelet Svono, north of these rings of the Mizbeach was the Beit Amit Bachayim. The word Tabach is embedded in there. And this is the area where they used to flay and quarter the animals. Valav Chet Amudim Nenasim. It was comprised of 8 short pillars of stone, whether they were circular or square is not clear here, but they had these 8 little jutting stones that came out of the ground. And then there were these squares of wood that sat on top of them. Now, whether they were whole planks of wood, whether they're just frames of wood, it had rows of hooks that were inserted on it. Each one of them had 3 rows. So here, again, we saw this in Masechet Tamid, whether the 3 rows were 3 rows of hooks, starting from the highest, then a middle range, and then a lower set of hooks, from which they used to hang the animal in order to flay the animal, and they used to flay it and quarter it on the tables of Shayish, the marble tables that sat between the Amudim. So whether that was when it was the heavier animals like the para, they just did it on the table because it was too much to hang and flay it and quarter it. So they used the tables for that. Or whether when they hung it and flayed it, they had the tables near it so they could put the pieces in the flaying onto the tables as they flayed the animal. And some suggest that the table sat right below the Amudim. The para, which was the larger animal, was hanging from its hind legs, but then resting the head and the other area on the table itself, and or they were used also to rinse off the innards of the animal. So different views as to what exactly the interplay was between the Amudim and the Shulchanot. And with regards to the Gimel Starim, whether they were there because of the different size animals, the highest ones for the para, the middle ones for the ayo, the lowest ones for the keves, or whether it meant 3 starim means that they were 3-sided. These wooden boards actually were set up like a triangle, and that means that from 3 sides of the amud, you had a plank that you could work with. That means that you could have people working simultaneously and all 3 sides of the amud. That could also be the explanation of Mishlosha Tarim, that there were 3 rows that went around because there were 3 faces to this wooden square that they used to do the flaying on. And it was done as a triangle and not a square to avoid having somebody working with their back towards the Kodesh, the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That was north of the Mizbeach, Akior. So now we move over from the northern side of the Mizbeach to the southern side of the Mizbeach. Kior Hayah Ben Ulam Ula Mizbeach. The Kior sat between the Ulam, which is the beginning of the Heichal, where the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim are found, and the Mizbeach. Umashoch Klapei Darom. But it was pulled a little bit to the south, That's because otherwise it would sit between the Mizbeach and the Ulam Mizbeach Neichal, which we don't want it to do because the Mizbeach itself has to be facing the Petach HaUlam and the Petach HaEichal. And so in order to not interrupt it, they moved the Kior south of that in order to be Ben Ulam Mizbeach, but not blocking the Mizbeach from the Ulam. The question of how far south is determined by where you think the placement of the Mizbeach was in the Azara, which we'll get to again tomorrow, where the Tana of Masechet Midot believes that the robe of the Mizbeach was on the Darom in the southern side. We have a number of opinions amongst the Rishonim as to what that means, and then the impact on the footprint and the floor plan of the Azara from north to south. Ben Ulam LeMizbeach, between the Ulam and Mizbeach, Kafbet Ama. There were 22 Amot that we know again because we'll look at the layout again of the Azara, but we know we have 11 Amot of the, from the eastern side to the western side, we have the 11 Amot of the Ezrat Yisrael, the 11 Amot of the Ezrat Kohanim, and the 32 Amot of the base of the Mizbeach. And now we have another 22 Amot from the base of the Mizbeach on the other side to the Ulam, which is the entrance into the Heikal. Ve'yubet ma'alot ayusham. And there were 12 stairs that stood there. Rom ma'ala chatzi ama, v'shilcha ama. The height of the stairs were a chatzi ama, v'shilcha, and its depth was an ama, 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 v'rovet gimel ama, ama, v'rovet gimel. So then you have an ama, an ama, an ama, and then a longer stair that is three amot in depth, and then an ama, an ama, and rovet gimel, and then v'al yona, and the top one was ama, ama, v'rovet dalet, was an ama, an ama, and then a four ama extension. So here you have different interpretations as to how the layout of these stairs looked. How many sets were there of three? The Mishnah starts to start out with an ama, ama, v'rovet gimel, makes it sound like there is an ama of depth, and then three amot of depth. Remember, you have a total of 22 amot that you're covering with these stairs, and the question of how much floor space is there between the Mizbeach and the stairs. Then second, we'll see there's a machlok between the Chachamim and Yehuda with regards to this. So the Mishnah is somewhat unclear as to how the layout is. The way that the Tiferet Yisrael describes it was that there were actually three series of Ama, Ama, Rovet Shalosh. Even though the Mishnah only mentions two of them, many times the Mishnah mentions two and it means etc. So he believes that there were three series of Ama, Ama, Rovet Shalosh. That's five amot. So three series of those is 15 amot. And then the final series was an ama, ama, v'rovet dalet. Was an ama, an ama, and then a dalet, which made it six on the final series, which is 21 amot. And then there's one additional ama between the mizbeach and the start of the staircase. So there's an ama where you actually had floor space, actual flat floor space. And then from there it is ascended up to the 21 amot out of the 22 amot were covered by the stairs. And then we have Rabbi Yehuda Omer, El Yona, Ama, Ama, V'rovet Hay. That the upper one was a rovet, and then five amot. So that he covered all 22 amot, which means the first stair was adjacent to the Yisod HaMizbeach. There was no floor space between them. The first stair started at that Yisod HaMizbeach itself without any gap between them. That's the view of the Tiferet Yisrael as to the layout. Again, the Bartanura has a slightly different view as to what the structure of the stairs was. The Bartanura reads it much more literally in the Mishnah. It says that there are only three series of stairs. The first series had Ama, 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 and then three Amot in that series, which means a total of six Amot. The second series had an Ama, Ama, Shalosh, which would be five Amot in that series. And then the final series had Ama, 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 four stairs of Amot. And the final stair that was four amot, or eight in that series. So then you would have 8 plus 6 is 14, plus 5 is 19. And then you'd have two extra amot that would then fit between the Mizbeach and the stairs. And for Rabbi Yehuda, the top stair was 5 amot, so there'd be one amah between the stairs and the Mizbeach for Rabbi Yehuda, which in some senses makes a little more sense, because then even according to Rabbi Yehuda, there was a gap or a space between the stairs and the Mizbeach. Although the Tiferet Yisrael and the Gro read it the way we explained it, which is that the stairs were comprised of four series, and they just say that the Mishnah is saying, etc., when it says that the first two series and all the series were equal, which was 1-1, and then 3-1-1-3, 1-1-3, and then a final one of 1-1-4. But the similar idea that these were uneven stairs, and as we said earlier on in the Misechta, that these stairs were different than all the other stairs in the Migdash, because all the other stairs were half an amah high, half an amah in depth, whereas these stairs were, yes, a half an amah high, but their depth was different. First of all, some of them were amah, some of them were three, some of them were four. According to Rabbi Yehuda, one was five. So you had different sizes or layout of the stairs. And the height obviously increased from the Azara to the front of the Ulam is 6 amot, because you have 12 stairs. Each one is a half amah of height. Even though the footprints are different, their heights are all the same of half amah. So this 6 amah increase in elevation from the Ezrat Yisrael to the floor of the Ulam. Pitko shel Ulam, Govo, the Pitko shel Ulam, the height of which was 40 amot, and Rochbo was Kaf amot, that we already know from the Mishnayot earlier, which told us that all the entranceways in the Mikdash were 10 amot wide, 20 amot high, with the exception of the Ulam, which was double that, which was 40 amot high and 20 amot wide. V'hei melteraot shel mila hayu al gabav. And then there were these five pieces of wood that stood on top of the doorway of the Ulam. Hatachtona odefet al petach amamizeh v'amamizeh. The lowest of which extends beyond the opening of the doorway, which is 20 amot, by an amah on each side, so it means it's 22 amot long. V'shalamala mimenu odefet ale amah mizeh v'amah mizeh. The one above it extended another amah on each side, so it was 24 amot wide. Nimtzei tal yona. If you continue to do that, then the first one is 22, the second one is 24, the third one is 26, the fourth one is 28, the last one, al yona, lamed amah, was 30 amot wide. V'nidbach shel avanim hayu ben kol echad ve'echad. And there was a row of stone or a piece of stone that sat between them. So many times you've seen pictures or models of the Heichal. Above the doorway to the Heichal, there were these long, elongated pieces of wood. The Mila is translated as being the ash tree or ash wood. Most of the Farshim explained that it was wood from a tree that grows gallnuts. And so the wood would extend above the doorway of the Heichal. These are obviously extremely long pieces of wood that were put in there. And they were there for decorative purposes. They were not structural in nature. And they were decorative in the fact that they went from the top of the doorway of the Ulam and went outward. They extended. They got wider and wider. And then between each one of them, there's a stone layer that sits between them. And so those were this decorative top to the entranceway to the Ulam. And the Barthanura clearly says that it was wooden beams that had decorative inscriptions or drawings on it. And some say that the word mila, it's not describing the wood, but rather that it's a beged meshi adom, a red silk garment, and it was describing the color or the type of drawing or inscription that was on these items, rather than the type of wood that it was. The Tosfot Yom Tov points out that it wasn't a violation of lo titel lecha yesharah kol eitz, because that's only when it's an eitz bolet. He says that's based on the Rambam, and that's why it wasn't problematic over here. And the Tiferet Yisrael says something similar, that they had to be kvuot umushukaot v'binyan, they had to be affixed and indented or impressed into the building. Bein rashayim hakorot boltot l'chutz, they couldn't protrude outwards because of the problem lo titel lecha kol eitz. Now the girsa that we have here is Evan, although the girsa in the Mishnayot is Eitz. Obviously the reason that they changed it to Evan is because in the building of the Mikdash, you're not allowed to use wood. Now we've discussed a number of times that that's not altogether true. You can't use wood in structural building of the Mikdash. There can be wood there, as long as it's not structural in nature, and that we'll see towards the end of this Mishnah. There was klunosot shel Evan, or more likely klunosot shel Erez, these big cedar boards, That we're extending from the wall of the Heichal to the wall of the Ulam, so that it would not collapse. They were holding it up from buckling inward, because the height of the Ulam is 100 amot high, and that big building with narrow support needed some structural support along the way. So they used these konosot. And as the Tiferet Yisrael says, they were actually rounded, long pieces of wood that looked like telephone poles. And they were used to create structural support for the Eichal, because, again, the Eichal had no roof that divided it in half. The remainder of the Eichal, the Kodesh Kodesh Shashim, had two levels to it, and therefore the mid-level roof created support for the height of the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodeshim, whereas the Ulam itself was one structure with no second level to it, so it had no structural support in between to hold it together. Therefore, it needed additional structural support with these telephone pole-like pieces of wood that helped it or stopped it from buckling inward given its height. So again, if it's Evan, then it's easier to understand. If it's Erez, if these are cedar boards, then you have to explain why they are allowed to be used here, even though Eitz is not allowed to be used. So again, here they suggest that they were not built into the building. They were placed there in order to be structural support, but they weren't built into it, so that's why it wasn't a violation of the Isser of not putting Eitz there. And there were these chains of gold that hung from the ceiling of the Ulam. Sheben pirchei kuna olim. The young Kohanim used to climb up them. Roim et atarot. And then they would see the crowning, or the crowns that were at the top, which are these golden windows or golden structures there at the top of the Ulam. Tiferet Yisrael brings in the Tosfot in Gittim, in the name of the Gonim, that they were Kipot Muzavot. There were these dome-like golden structures that were above the windows of the Eichal, outside, and they were made like crowns. And it makes sense that they were outside the Eichal, not inside the Eichal itself, because otherwise when the Kohanim climbed up in the Ulam, how were they able to see these crowns if they were internal rather than external, and they weren't looking through the windows to see them? But it sounds like when they climbed up there, they were able to actually look at them directly because they were outside the Eichal. Shenamar, because the Pasuk says in Zechariah, Vatarot, yeah, Lechelem, Letovia, Lidaya, Odechein ben Tzfanya, Zikaron ve'Eichal Hashem, that these Atarot, these crowns, will be there as a memory, a memorialization of these individuals or these Kohanim, who, whether they donated them or whether they were the ones who manufactured or made them, but they will be remembered for the Atarot that were there, and those are the crowns at the top of the Ulam. Now, in the Ulam, we saw this again in Masechet Tamid, Begefen Shel Zahav. There was this golden grapevine, Haito Medet al Pitcho Shel Heichal, that was placed above the entranceway to the Heichal, Umudle al Gabei Kunasot, and it was laid across. Again, here these are trellises of wood, like you would do out in the fields with the vines. The reason they had to do this is because the gold was so heavy that if you didn't do this, it would fall down. Anybody who donated a leaf or a grape, or a bunch of grapes, used to bring it and then hang it on this grapevine. The Tiferet Yisrael says that it was not the actual owners or donator that hung it up, rather the Kohanim hung it up, because Israel was not allowed into that area. It was generally only an area where Kohanim could enter. And so that's why it was hung up by Kohanim. Although from the Pashtuta Mishnah, it sounds like the person who donated it was able to go in there and actually hang it up. Amar Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Tzadok, Maseh Haya, there was an instance, V'nimnu alea shlosh meot Kohanim lifnota, took 300 Kohanim to take it out of the Heichal. As to why they were taking it out of the Heichal, is either because once a year they would take it down and then they would monetize it and use the monies towards Berek Abayit, towards the Mikdash. And there are some who suggest that the leftover monies were then given to the Kohanim because they're the Tomchei HaTorah. You can see that in the Rambam over the here that says, Vasat Surat Gefen Shel Zahav Al Pitcho Shel Chal Lehit Barech Kegefen. That should be blessed like a Gefen. Lefisha Knesset Yisrael Nim Shalad Gefen. Because the Knesset Israel are compared to a Gefen, Kamoshim Ufarsam Bav Katuv, like the Pasuk in Tehillim says. And it's Tiferet Yisrael, says similar to the Rambam, that it is a mashal for Bnei Israel. He adds on based on the Gemara in Chulin, because the gefen, the vines of the grape, are weak and flimsy, whereas its actual fruit is very sweet. And that's a reference to Bnei Israel, because they are weak ba'aretz, because they don't have mazel, and they only depend on the fruit, meaning the sweetness that comes from Hashem, which they get from Avim Shem Hashemayim. And then he adds on top of that, v'otzurat ha'gefen mareis the Torah, shenim shalat ha'gefen. It also is a remez to the Torah that's compared to a gefen. Just like a gefen needs something to hold it up, the klunas sot, the trellises that hold it up, so too, those that are learning Torah, or those that are conveying the Torah, need support. Dimein kemach ain't Torah. If there's no money, then there's no Torah. And since the Kohanim, who are the Shomrei HaKerem HaTorah, are working in the Mikdash, these donations, after they were used for the Bedek HaBayit, were then given to the Kohanim, because the Kohanim are Yoru Mishpatecha LeYaakov V'Toratcha LeYisrael, and therefore whatever was left over was given to them as the Tomchei HaTorah. Another thing brought by the Tiferet Yisrael is also the possibility that the vine laying on the trellises is like Bnei Yisrael relying on Zchut Avot, that we rely on our forefathers, and maybe once a year they took it out, or they took it out to show the people when they came up the other regal a greatness of Klal Yisrael and how much they were donating to the Mikdash. There's a Midrash brought by the Yerushalmi that says that when Shlomo HaMelech put these into the Mikdash, he actually planted them, and they grew fruit. Even though they were golden, then they were not real vines, they nevertheless grew, and they produced fruit. Although again, here we're discussing in Masechet Midot, Bayit Sheni, not Bayit Rishon, so then that may not have any correlation to that of Shlomo HaMelech. And if you remember from Masechet Tamid, this is one of the instances where they said that it was Derech Guzma, that it was an exaggeration, that it was 300 Kohanim. It was a lot of Kohanim, but not necessarily 300 Kohanim. Pitcho Shel Eichal, the entranceway to the Eichal, Gavo Esrim Ama, Berachbo Eser. The entranceway to the Eichal was a standard entranceway in the Mikdash. That means that it's 20 amot high and 10 amot wide. V'arba dalotot ayulo. It had four doorways to it. Now, the Heichal, or Petach Shel Heichal, would have had the same structure and in the need for the same number of doors, except because the Petach Olam was so big, we saw before they didn't have any doors on it. It only had a parochet that hung over there because it was so large. Whereas here, by the Petach Heichal, which is more reasonably shaped, it's 20 amot high, 10 amot wide, over there they had doorways. But as we're going to learn later on, the thickness of the walls of the Heichal, as well as the thickness of the walls of the Ulam, they had to be pretty thick because they're supporting a very, very tall and heavy structure. And so the walls actually had depth or thickness to them. So when you're entering into a doorway, you can think of walking through Shar Yafo or the Dung Gate. The gates themselves are not one place. They're an extent. They have a width to them because they're part of the walls of the city. And here they're part of the walls of the Ulam or the Heichal, and therefore there's depth to it. When you're walking through the doorway, you have six amot when you enter into the Heichal between the entrance to the Heichal and when you actually enter into the Heichal. Those six amot surround the entire building. In those six amot, we'll see later on, there are ta'im. There are actually rooms or chambers that are found throughout the Heichal that comprise the thickness of the walls or that are embedded in the thickness of the walls. So here, since the Heichal has six amot of depth to its wall, it has two sets of doors. Shtaim bifnim, v'shtaim bimachutz. Two internally and two externally. I mean, two doors at the beginning of the doorway and two doors at the end of the doorway. Shnemar, shtaim daltot eichal, ula kodesh. And therefore the eichal would be the outer doorways. The kodesh would be the inner doorways. Or, some say it's derived from the subsequent pasuk, which is going to be brought later in the Mishnah, which is the shtaim dilatot, the dilatot. That sounds like there are two doors to each of the doorways, and that's the way Rashi explains the pasuk in Yechezkel. Hachitzonot niftachot l'toch ha-petach, the outer ones, the ones from the ulam into the echal, open up into the width of the area of the doorway, l'chasot uvyo shel kotel, that they used to then cover the walls on the side of the echal. So you have these two big golden doors. The walls on the side there were not golden. When you open up the doors, the golden doors sit on the walls to make it golden over there. And even though there are six amot of depth over there, And the doorway was 10 amot. That means each door was 5 amot. It nevertheless covered the entire space there because you have to allocate half an amah for the hinges of the external doors and half an amah for the internal doors. So you take that, that's the extra amah. So there's 5 amot left open and that's what the door is covered. And then the inner ones open up and then went all the way around till they were 180 degrees on the opening, as opposed to the outer ones that went 90 degrees and then covered the walls next to them. The internal ones opened 180 degrees and then covered the walls that were parallel to what the doorways were, flat against the walls. The entire house, I don't think it means the entire Beit HaMikdash, but rather the Heichal, the internal parts of the Heichal and the Kodesh, were plated with gold. Chutz me'achar ha'daltot, with the exception of the area behind the doors. They didn't need to plate them with gold, because as soon as they opened the doors created the plating of gold along those areas. Yudomer, b'toch ha'petach ha'yum dot. They stood inside the area of the opening, meaning that six amot area. Ukumin itztarmita hayu. They were similar to an itztarmita, which is obviously a Greek word. There are others that called it an artsapimtu or an itztaba benikaplot la'achorehem. And then they used to fold on themselves. So they were doors that had a hinge in the middle. So that means that the five amah door that's opening up folded on itself, and that means that it took up 2.5 amot. So then, if that's the case, elu shnei amot mechza, ve'elu shnei amot mechza. That way, if the doors that are on the outside of the entrance to the Eichal and the doors that are on the inside of the Eichal, if they both open up into the area of the entrance itself, the in-between, the six amot, then they would fill it up because 2.5 amot from one door, 2.5 amot from the other door because it folded on itself. And then you have a v'chatzi amah u'mezuzah mikan, v'chatzi amah u'mezuzah mikan. And then the hinges took up a half amah for the actual doors where they were hinged and located. And so that makes up the amah, 5 amot between them. That 5 amot was covered by the doors that folded on themselves, 2.5 amot each. And amar, 2 delatot, 3 delatot, 2 doors to each of the doorways, 2 musabot delatot, and those doors would pivot on themselves or fold into 2, 2 delat achad, 2 delatot acheret. And each delat was made up of 2 parts, 2 component parts, that folded onto each other, and therefore it was true on one side, it was true on the other side as well. And that means that the doors were comprised of 2 doors that folded into 4 doors, and that's what's being described in the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Ushnei pishpishim ayu l'shar hagadol. And the large entranceway, which is the entranceway to the Eichal. Now even though it's not the largest entranceway, because you know the Petach Ulam was bigger than it, it's called the Shar Gadol because it is the most significant entranceway. It is the petach to the Heichal, to the Kodesh, and the Kodesh of Kodeshim. And therefore, because of its significance, it's called the Petach HaGadol. Some suggest it has to do that it's relative to the other smaller doors. It was called that, but that's unlikely because we found other places where, like Shar Nicanor, also had smaller doors, and they don't call it the Shar HaGadol. So Gadol most likely is a reference to the significance of that doorway. Then it has 2 smaller doorways, achad b'tzafon v'achad b'darom, 1 to the north, 1 to the south. And again, we saw this in Masechet Tamid, shebidarom adlo nichnas adam bo me'olam. No person ever entered the southern entranceway. V'alav hu mifurash ayidei Yechezkel. And that's the pasuk that we find in Yechezkel, shenemar. V'yomer elai Hashem, ashar hazeh sagur iyeh, lo yipateach. This doorway will always remain closed, it will not be opened. V'ish lo yavo bo, no man shall ever enter it. Because God enters through it, and it will remain closed. Symbolic in nature, that God doesn't need doors open for him to enter, and there was the southern door where God enters, whereas the other doors are open for man's need and for man's ability to do avodah in the Mikdash. Natalat ha-mafteach, you took the key, upatachat ha-pishpesh, and you opened up the smaller door, obviously on the northern side, because the southern one was not open. V'nichnas la-hatah. Then you enter into one of the chambers that was adjacent to the doorway, umayata lehechal, and then from the ta into the heichal itself. So these pishpeshim, as opposed to others where we saw the pishpesh might have been embedded in the doorway itself or immediately adjacent to it, these doorways were slightly skewed north and south of the entranceway, the Eichal, and it allowed you to enter the series of chambers that were embedded in the thickness of the walls of the Eichal. So when you entered into that chamber took you beyond the thickness of the wall of the Eichal, and then from that chamber there was a small entrance into the Eichal itself. That means that when you entered, you actually entered from the right doorway, which was the northern doorway. You entered into the top. The top brought you beyond the six amot of the door frame. And then you made a left turn and entered into the Heichal. Once you're in the Heichal, you unlock the doors and open them from the inside. The internal doors first, and then the external doors. They're open from internally rather than externally. That's the view of the Tanakam and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'toch Ovyo Shel Koto Ayam Elech, Ad Shenimtzamei Ben Shnei Hashearim. He says that that little entranceway did not reach into the chambers and then into the Eichal itself. Rather, it landed you between the two doorways. It landed you in the thickness of the doorways. When you enter that small entranceway, you would land in between the two doors. You'd be in the middle of the door frame itself. And then you would open up the doorways. The outer doorway you'd be opening from internally. Whereas the epinimiot, the internal doorways, the ones closer to the Kodesh, you'll be opening from Mibachutz, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Lamed Vav, Amud Bet.